Yes, hello, folks. Welcome to the weekly Manchester United pod. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brown, joined with my regular co-host, the excellent James Rhodes. It's been 2 weeks since we last recorded. We, of course, recorded shortly after the Liverpool game, where there was a massive emotional high. We were quickly brought back down to earth at the weekend. Every time United win a game, like they won against Liverpool, we ask the same question: how have they turned the corner? And we get the same answer: they repeatedly let you down. What I don't understand, James, is okay, Phil, but how is it that you're that bad? That performance was a disgrace.
Like, yeah. I'll get to go ahead.
Obviously, this will cover Ten Hag. We'll cover the Jason Wilcox news, of course, which is breaking as we recording and the Barada stuff and maybe Dan Ashworth. But, you know, I took some flack on social media at the weekend because people misunderstood what I was saying. I'm not saying Ten Hag isn't to blame. I'm not saying don't sack him. What I'm asking you to do is to make sure that when you sack him, you know exactly why he failed so that you can correct this going forward. Because in the past, United have reacted to results, sacked the manager to get better results without asking why can we not win these games? Why are we stuck in this consistent cycle? I don't think they wanted to ask that question because the answer involved, first of all, them asking the question. You're a part of the problem. You need to change the way this football club is run for this to change. Any of us will do that. But what we saw at the weekend was indefensible.
Yeah, it was. And we talked about it last time because we said it before. Funnily enough, I think Brentford before an international break in that late win against Brentford. We talked about how we had that win and then an international break and we came back and it was the same usual crap. And it's kind of crazy because I think that Brentford game, was worse than the 4-0 loss in many ways at the beginning. When you talk about the performance, it easily could have been 7. I mean, it was one of those games that they could have just kept scoring goals if they could find the net at all. It was probably, I think, the second worst performance I've seen this season. Behind the loss to Bournemouth 4-0, I believe it was at that time. This was up there. I would say that one was worse because it was at home. This was up there. It was awful. They had absolutely no idea what to do. I have no idea. I can't say there was a single player that I would claim had a good performance in that game. Not a single one. There was some okay last ending. Yeah, Onana. Yeah, good point. Yes. Mm-hmm. How many years is the goalkeeper going to be our best player at United? Mm-hmm. How frustrating is that? I would say Onana is probably our most consistent player this season now in the league. And that's incredibly frustrating that our goalkeeper continues to be the most important player. I don't even know what to say. I mean, the exact same problems that showed up before showed up again. And Brentford play in a very direct, very physical style of football that is unfortunately probably the worst aspect of this Ten Hag team in defending. Is defending against straight route one physical play that just cuts right through you. They pretty much let us have the ball in many instances and then would drop off and we had no real threat in breaking them down. And then they would just go fast right through our team. So many instances, 3 passes from the goalkeeper and they're in on net. It's almost unbelievable that happens, but it just kind of shows that, you know, the emotional high of a Liverpool game that almost played into our hands a bit by being basketball back and forth the way that we like it. It's just that it's a one-off. And unfortunately, it's the good games that are a one-off, not the bad games at this point. Yeah, that's just where we are.
Ten Hag's always 1 defeat away from having his, you know, legitimacy questioned.
Yeah.
And that's not a good position for him to be in because you just can't survive being that fragile. These are the types of things that have to die with the season. These types of performances, these types of, you know, here's the thing, James. I was looking back through some of my old notes and I remember looking at a game where United played against Leicester. I think it was shortly after they'd lost to Liverpool and City 5-2-0. And Brendan Rodgers was remarking about how easy it was to pass through United's midfield. And I was looking at notes with, saying things like, emphasizing things like attacking, as you can attack individually and hope for a bit of individual magic, but you can't defend. And they've been doing this forever. And this is what I can't understand, is that when I look at Ten Hag last season, he clearly knows how to set a football team up. But for some reason, what's happening right now is unbelievable. I mean, I'm not a big lover of using stats to make an argument. I mean, the menu is not the dinner that they help you, but they're not, they can be manipulated. The shot stats conceded are horrendous. And it's just basically all averages. If you're conceding that many shots in a game against professional footballers, you're going to concede goals. But also, another ugly aspect showed up at the weekend that has been missing for a while, but continues to rear its head. You need to play that game for 107 minutes and don't concede. The minute they score, they concede.
I know.
And I'm going, how is it that this continuously happens? And I'm looking at that goal. The ball gets knocked over the top. Wan-Bissaka's ball watching. And he plays everyone onside. The same thing happened at Newcastle away, where if you have him mentally engaged in a one-on-one thing, but once that is not the case, he's a tendency to mentally drift. And of course he plays Brentford onside. I mean, it would have been daylight robbery had United won the game, but you're looking at these consistent things showing up and going, this is really, really poor. I mean, this is... For United players, how timid they are out of possession, how slow they are in possession. I mean, you're not going to break a professional football team down by little pass here. Just watch how many times they got the ball, moved it to the left and moved it to the right from a standing position with no intensity, no speed. Even when Brentford would concede from a set piece or an attack, how slow they were bringing the ball in. I mean, how many times did Onana almost get booked for time wasting in a game they had to win?
Yeah, it's hard to understand that. It's hard to understand why, why it changes so much, and why some of these basics just can't get in terms of the way that they play. You'd think that there would be a lot more intensity across the board, but it's lacking everywhere. I mean, it is lacking in every single position. And it's, the thing that is really confusing to me, it's like you said about being so easy to pass through. When I look at last season, there was two things that I thought were successful, and I thought we overperformed a little bit anyway, but there was two things that were probably successful. And it really lines up with the quote you just said, is that individually you can get some magic to attack and score goals, but defensively it's as a unit. Last season, during the very good run, obviously, on the goal-scoring front, Marcus Rashford went on a pretty, something he's not duplicating this year, and you probably wouldn't expect him to duplicate, because I think it was the best goal-scoring form in all of Europe for about a three-month period. And that was a huge part of the goals that United were scoring. More than anything else, that was a big part of it. But defensively, they were very compact, very solid, very well set up defensively. Yeah, and you look at it and say, why is it so much worse? Mm-hmm. When Casemiro comes on, they look worse most of the time this season. But it's also the setup. When I watch it, I'm very concerned. Kobbie Mainoo has been getting a lot of obviously deserved praise and hype and all of that. I really worry about him in that midfield and what's going to happen to him. When you watch how he played and had to play against Brentford, it was impossible. It is an impossible job for him to do, to play in that midfield. I have no idea how you could ask any player to do that, especially one who you're trying to properly develop and mold into, a certain type of player and develop what he's doing. It is an impossibility, and the task is, I don't know. I really worry about that aspect of it from that standpoint. And I don't know what the answer is, but to me, the really obvious thing that I just cannot understand, and what really concerns me, that I tweeted out during the game as well, or posted late in the game, is it seems like that Scott McTominay goal was practically plan A at this point. That late run, late game goal from Scott McTominay is practically plan A. And it throws so much out of whack. He's been so good at that but he has zero effect on the rest of the game behind the goal, the final third. He has no effect on it. He really doesn't. And it's just the nature of, you know, his strengths as a player. I'm not even blaming him. He's done really well what he's been asked to do. So it's really hard. I don't want to sit there and talk about any individual from the team or through Ten Hag and say they're that one person is to blame, because they win as a team and they lose as a team at this point. And I think there's just something fundamentally wrong with all of it. That's just not working. And it doesn't look like it's going to be solved. You know, if it's not solved now, it's April 1st. They're not making changes. This isn't going to be resolved in the next 10 games.
I mean, if I'm Ten Hag, and I understand he's in a bit of a difficult position, because if one of the things that I credited him with last season was his direct honesty in interviews. Now, he's never been one to get over carried away with wins, and he's not someone that gets overly negative with defeats. And I look at him and I thought last season I really appreciated how direct he was, and he can be that way when he wants. He was like that with Jadon Sancho. But when you're prevaricating over performances and saying things that defy what your eyes just saw, you know, that we played well or this or that, there has to be a way of saying it as you see it with a, you know, and I understand he doesn't want to lay into some of his players. I get that. But that's unacceptable. I mean, United fans go down to London, you know, the night before Easter Sunday. It's, you know, they're not getting out of that game. Bear in mind it went on for, you know, an hour and 10 minutes. You know, so about after, but almost 11 before they get out of that ground at night, no train home. And they put that performance in. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, look at, I was watching it the weekend. This one of the things that was infuriating me was how tepid United were at possession, how easy they were to pass through. But I think that what you're seeing is partly a lack of intensity from those players, because just assuming this is the case, I don't think they believe they're set up correctly. I think in their mind they're going, I'm not going to chase this 50-50 ball because there's someone 5 feet away that's going to pick up. And once players lose belief that they can accomplish what you're asking them to do, this is what you see. You don't get 95%, you get 50%. Right?
Yeah.
Ten Hag has to fix this problem. I don't care how practical he has to be, but he cannot continue to do this and expect to keep his job at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you, because I think this is where people get mistaken on this idea of losing the dressing room and things like that, because I don't believe that happens in the manner that people say it does at all. I don't think that any player steps on and wants to lose a game. I don't think that any manager coaches a game and wants to lose a game. I don't think that anybody at that level of, except maybe some of them who are betting on the games, but it's a different story. but I don't think any of the other ones actually intend to do that. But it is correct. I mean, look, anything that you do in life, if you're unsure about what you're doing, you're going to be bad at it, and it can appear to be lack of effort, lack of focus, all of that. The more certainty that you have in anything, the more you can direct 100%. You know, towards doing it and do it as fully and as much as possible. And I see it. There was a lot of instances in that game where players like Garnacho had started some sort of press that wasn't followed up with maybe in the way he was expecting and turns around and goes, what's going on? And it's like from the midfield or from a fullback or from, and it was happening all over the pitch. The players are totally not on the same page. And so it leads to timidness, like, well, should I, shouldn't I, do I back off? You know, and then you'll see Bruno go tearing into a press, but it's not followed up with by the next midfielder or by the fullback or by the, and it just becomes a mess. And I think that is the biggest issue, as you say, is that, you know, they step out there and when they know what they're doing, you can see it and it works. It's obvious to me that that is the case too. The complete lack of confidence in how they're being set up working, because it hasn't been working. And when you set up and you go for it and then a team just pings the ball right through you, you start to go, wait a second, something's wrong here. And naturally, you're going to try to also then start adjusting individually on your own to try to solve that problem, which can create more problems for somebody else because now the team's out of cohesion, even if the setup was wrong. Yeah. It's really a poor chain of events. And there's obviously a lot of smart people who've analyzed how it's going and why and all that. And I don't think I have the, you know, the brain for that type of thing, but it's not working. That much is clear.
Well, you know, look, here's the thing. If you look at Ten Hag's lineups most weeks this season, typically they've included in the team 2 to 3 players that he actually sent. So I'm not saying that he doesn't have mitigation. I accept that. But just because he didn't send players doesn't mean he doesn't want players, or he doesn't rate them, or he doesn't think they're good enough. Because, you know, how different would United look at the weekend if they had all their players back? We have Shaw and Martinez in central defense. I'm trying to think, you know, where anyone
maybe
else
Casemiro, but I'm not sure if he would even start at this point.
Where, you know, so this is pretty much, give or take, United's best team.
Right? Yeah,
we've got a couple of key players. We, you know, obviously Martinez is big. He didn't look match fit at the weekend. You're looking at that going, I think in your second season, you know, you should. We've a right to expect better. Look, I know that United are a mess internally, but Ten Hag took the job knowing United didn't have a football structure behind. I mean, he knows what a football structure looks like. There's one at Bayern, there's one at Ajax. He knows what one looks like. And yes, United have been in constant limbo with the football club, you know, trying to be sold, running on fumes, no proper preparation and signings and all that. And he did, I have to say, I think he overachieved in his first season. I think that for Ten Hag, you know, I want him to work. Right? Do I want every United manager to work? And if I felt that all United's problems would leave with him, I'd want him gone today. But I want this decision made by football people that can look at this and say, look, this is why this guy failed. Okay, not the result, because failure is not an event, it's a process. And to understand it, you have to understand where you went wrong in the process.
Correct.
Right? A collective failure, not an individual failure. And this is the problem with United in the past. We've always seen it as an individual failure, not collective. So it's never resulted in structural change. Finally, now you have people inside the football club that are demanding the highest standards, who will support managers with the, you know, with amazing resources and give you a functioning football club. And now we can make a decision and say, we know why we failed, let's fix that. I'm not saying, so this is the argument I was trying to make on social media. I'm not saying keep Ten Hag. I'm saying it's really, really important that if you understand the solution, you understand the problem. This is why this happened, right? And I'm sure 60 to 70% of the answers to those questions don't even involve Ten Hag. But that doesn't mean that he keeps his job. I mean, at any other top football club, he wouldn't have. And so the fact is he's being protected a bit by the chaos behind the scenes. And once that chaos gets removed, in many ways, it removes his excuses for failure. And as we've said before, United have had two really successful managers in a 146-year history. So it's hard to get the right guy. And this is hard. Most managers, you know, most clubs get it wrong. But this is, this next decision has to be a proper evaluation process that understands the problem.
Agreed. And, you know, a couple times now, and, you know, Ineos do these little videos once in a while. And I do mean Ineos, like they do these little videos once in a while where they talk about kind of the latest across the whole brand, right? And everything that's involved in it. And they put another one out again, I think at the end of last week, and they have little interviews with Sir Jim. And they were doing this one from Old Trafford, like the sort of the stage was set on it, and they talked to him again. And I think it's the third time that he said that he needs patience, that the fans need some patience now, because it's 2 to 3 years before you're going to expect to see results. He says, but I want to see the trajectory going the right direction. And the thing that I think, you know, people will look at it and say, well, if we just sold these two players, we're solved, we're fixing it. And it's a joke. It's a joke. I think, unfortunately, people have convinced themselves too many times. All of us have, because, you know, we always want to be optimistic and think we're almost there, that the club is almost there, that it's, it's just these few problems would solve it. It's not. People need to grasp that this is a bad football club. Okay, like it's a harsh sort of things to say, but this is a bad football club. And I mean, as a whole, it's been, and it needs to, and resolving it is not fast. And it's not about results. You know, you can get second in the Premier League, like we had under Jose and like we had under Ollie, and be miles away from being a good team. You can be miles away because you can luck results in the short term. You always can. But it is a process that results in results. And when the process is working correctly, the results will waver and they'll waver, but they'll continue on an upward trajectory. That is the point of it. A regular, steady, linear upward trajectory that isn't about, you know, peaks and valleys, but the kind of the middle ground of where it's going to be. And that has been lacking at United. It's been flat forever, and it's been based on these luck-based good year, bad year, you know, which is just simply the basis of not knowing, you know, what the right process is and not having one. So sometimes you luck into some good players. Sometimes you luck into some good coaching. Sometimes you luck into a good group that kind of works together. And sometimes you don't. And so it's up and down and there and back. And so, yeah, I mean, that I completely 100% agree with that. I have my own opinions, you know, on Ten Hag, on the process, on all of that. But at the end of the day, like I've said, I back whatever they're going to end up doing. Even if I think today that there's basically zero chance in my mind that Ten Hag is the right guy, if they were to say, you know what, we're going to continue with him, I'm backing it 100% fully, because it means I know it will be made based on the process, you know, on doing the right things and on the right decision moving forward.
Yeah, you have to evaluate his entire work. Like Martin Edwards said that if Ferguson didn't lose at Forest, whether this is true or not, I don't know, he still wouldn't have sacked him because they could see all the other work that was going on. Yeah. You know, so you have to look beyond the result. You know, the results are obviously the most important thing, but you don't sack a guy because of a bad result. You sack them for bad work that resulted in that happening. Mm-hmm. United haven't had people internally capable of evaluating good from bad work. But here's the thing, James. One of the things that Solskjaer was saying in that interview with Gary Neville is the target every year was top four.
Yeah.
And when your target every year is top four, there's a couple of things happening there. One, the message you're sending to your players is it's okay to lose. You know, it's not terminal to our season if you lose 10 games, 7 games, whatever, right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to win the league, losing a game is a crisis. You're trying to finish top four, it's not. So inevitably, when you have top four as your target, 1 or 2 years you're going to overperform, 1 or 2 years you're going to underperform. So United, where they finished third, second, anywhere from third, second to fifth, sixth. When they underperform, they're finishing just outside the top four. When they overperform, they're finishing just above the top four. And you get this variance because occasionally, they you know, some of that depends on the decline of other teams, of course. But, you know, when you're part of the top four, this is what you should be expecting every year. Is that you're going to pretty much be within a spot or two of that of your target, which they usually are. When you're finishing top four, you know, Arsenal go out last January and get what they get, Trossard and who else did they say, Jorginho, right? United got Weghorst and Sabitzer. United don't make any of their loan deals permanent for obvious reasons. This is a football club that hasn't been trying to compete with Man City and Liverpool and the top teams at the top because it's not been their goal, right? Now, that being said, that thankfully is going to change, and I don't, you know, I think that we have to realize that, like, everything inside that football club, you and I expect trophies, but the Glazers just wanted to qualify for financial revenue streams. That was it, and inevitably they came up short. But what I see from United now is, I mean, it's infuriating to watch that Brentford game at the weekend. There was a point during the Liverpool game second half when I was angry because Liverpool were completely dominating the game. I don't think they'll make a mistake next weekend that if they dominate the game, they won't kill it. That kept United in the game, got them a last-minute equaliser or 87th-minute equaliser. If they go out against Liverpool next week and it's bad, I think Ten Hag would find himself in a very difficult position.
Yeah, and honestly, I wouldn't look past Chelsea away It's a difficult place to play at the Bridge this week. I mean, it's a difficult, and that's what, 3 days in between those two games. It's a difficult place to play. I understand Chelsea aren't very good. They've also held City to a draw twice this year. They come up in some big games. They have a lot of talent. It's just a mess of a club at the moment. Kind of like us in many respects. I say a lot of, there's a lot of similarities between Chelsea and United. And so writing them off when they could just pop up in a big game and win it against you, especially away where United haven't won, I think, since 2019 or 20 or something like that. It's a tough one. And then Liverpool at the weekend. So yeah, I think this is, it's unfortunate because the Brentford game was probably the one you really, really couldn't lose of these three. And you couldn't draw points in of these three. These are going to be tough. And I think they are defining, and it's not so much about, you know, the point being that results are everything, because they're not. There's a lot of evaluations that'll go into Ten Hag, into the manager and all of that. But bad results don't help you. You know what I mean? Like, good results can help you a little bit, but on the overall argument, but bad results really don't. And if they start to knock you out of the Champions League spots, which I think one more loss, it's finished, frankly. I mean, it's 11 points off Aston Villa.
I don't think it's off Tottenham.
It's over, right? We could probably say it's over at this point. But the further it falls, and the further it falls, the more they're going to have to, if they're deciding to make that change, they're going to have to be looking at other managers, talking to them, and really getting active on it. And that's the type of thing that won't be kept private, which means I think you start to see some stuff actually come out. I always expected once the kind of Champions League thing is settled a little bit, then either way, they'll start to move forward. And when you look at it, which we'll get to today, obviously they're doing the same on the other fronts. And so the manager's essentially what's going to come under scrutiny next for the coming plans.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's some other interested narratives over the next 2 months. Marcus Rashford has 2 months to see if his Euros
career,
if he's going to get picked. If he doesn't find consistency in the next 2 months, he doesn't go to the Euros. I want to see what response that brings out in him. I want to see what response it brings out in other players who are in similar situations. You know, how badly do you want to go to the Euros this summer? How badly do you want to make sure you're still here next summer? Because as much as Ten Hag, look, here's the thing, Chase. If you want to play instead, you have to get players capable of playing that way. You know, Ralph Rangnick talked about this. You know, you build the squad year after year after year, built on players that can actually play that way. If Pep Guardiola takes over Sheffield United, he's not playing tiki taka for obvious reasons. Right? Ten Hag clearly doesn't have the players to play the way he wants to play, but a top coach has to adjust his tactics. When he said United wouldn't play like Ajax, this is because he didn't have the same players. Different league, different pace, different everything. You know, you get punished for your mistakes in the Premier League. And, you know, Brentford had a far better striker on the field than what United did. You know, you have to have really, really good players playing a cohesive system that gives you a chance to win. And the first thing you do is nullify a threat, which, you know, United always keep a team in the game, you know, because they're so wide open. I accept Ten Hag has some major mitigating. You know, the fact he hasn't had a left back all season is an absolute disgrace to any professional football team. The fact he hasn't had a striker for the most of the previous season is unacceptable. But at the same time, you have to have a bit of a. What one of the things that concerned me about the weekend was the fact that it was pretty obvious after about 25 minutes how United were getting broken down and attacked. And they were not capable of making an adjustment to nullify that threat. Brentford made an adjustment after 10 minutes when United started well, changed the game completely. Ten Hag was unable to make any adjustments in that game to nullify a pretty basic threat.
Yeah, I know. It's very, you know, that's happened a few times where the other team, you know, you have a good kind of opening 10, 12 minutes and then the other team makes one adjustment and United are incapable of adjusting back.
Jim, I'll be honest. Ten Hag's come up against Thomas Frank 3 times, and Thomas Frank has screwed
outclassed every time. I know.
I mean, United put up a miracle winning at home. They didn't deserve it. You know,
like I said, I thought this was worse than the 4-0 in Ten Hag's second game.
And this was less forgivable. You know, you could understand the first one because it didn't happen. Yeah. But this is, by this stage, you know, yes, certain players, it's fine if you can implement the playing style that can win you the league. but you should be able to implement a playing style that can win at Brentford with the team players.
Fulham and
I mean, what if you go manage an international team? You can't send all the players that you want. You have to be able to play with the players that you have. And you know, top managers can do that. And I think the Ten Hag, you have to look at players and say, okay, this is how we get this team to win. And right now, Eric, your most important responsibility is to get wins, not to have beautiful football. It's just get wins. And to me, the Brentford Fulhams, as I said, after the Liverpool game, you know, you never lose to Liverpool and City, I get it, you know, but far more to defining to me is the Brentford, the Fulhams, those kind of defeats, the Bournemouths, because those are not forgivable. And those are the things that, to me, you know, Ten Hag doesn't have a legitimate out, you know, the Copenhagen, the Galatasaray stuff, because so much of it just looks to me like idiocy.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Okay, we only have another 15 minutes or so left here. Let's evolve a conversation on Ineos, as expected, moving quite quickly. They looks like they've agreed a deal for Jason Wilcox, who's going to come in to be part of the recruitment team. What's your understanding there?
Yeah, I got a little heads up on this that I wasn't really sure what to make of last night. And I just was like, I guess we'll see what happens on it. But a couple of things have happened. They've been in touch for quite a while. From what it looks like, they made an approach and made an offer today in order to buy him out of his contract in what they felt was like the terms of his deal. and then it seems that Southampton were kind of holding on for a little bit more. Fabrizio Romano has said that he's resigning essentially today. And what that will do, it doesn't change the need for a notice period. It simply puts a little bit more pressure on Southampton to accept the money because they don't have somebody. There's no point in him, you know, otherwise he's not working for them anymore. And likely they won't accept the money. And what's been going on here is I think, I don't remember how much he spoke about it in the last podcast, but obviously it's been taking a while on this Ashworth thing. Newcastle have been extremely, stubborn on allowing this, on any sort of change in terms of the start date for Dan Ashworth. He will join United. It's like foregone conclusion that is happening. He's, you know, all the things that have occurred. The question has always been now in the last little while is when, and they've been very stubborn there. And so the problem you have is that you kind of want to get somebody who's, you know, Omar Barada is good, is very experienced. He can work on deals. He's done a lot of that, but you don't necessarily want him doing entirely focused on recruitment this summer. You do want some people coming in. And so, you know, they were looking at kind of alternative plans because initially the goal was get Ashworth in first, then the rest, you know, and move it down the dominoes like that. But with that taking a while, you know, they were looking at kind of some alternative plans, and it looks like the idea is essentially press ahead with Jason Wilcox, have him oversee recruitment for this summer and get directly involved right away in helping to make these things happen, you know, with the connections that he has, the experience that he has. And I think this definitely speaks to, you know, one, that they're ready. Like we talked about, they're going to, summer starts now. That's what we've been saying. Mm-hmm. You know, you reach end of March, this international break that just occurred, that's when you really get going. That is 100% when recruitment really gets going. They've made a lot of basic contacts, but now they're going to want to be pressing ahead on those deals and starting to really line things up and really form what they're doing for next season. And so I think time is of the essence now. As far as I've heard, I expect that they'll probably still get this done, even though there's a little bit of conflict here, given that he's resigned. Southampton.
Well, maybe their players are already playing for next season, since they probably conspired at the England camp where Garcia actually picking out the players to get Eric Ten Hag sacked so that he could be their new manager. No, you don't think that's a plausible theory, no?
Oh, yeah, very plausible. Yeah.
That must be happening. Let's sit down with Marcus and the boys who don't actually being picked by Gareth. Hey, let's get Eric sacked so I can be on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, Rashford is somebody who I think has been very underplayed for England. Even when he was in his best run of form, the amount of time he played at like the World Cup and stuff, even scored a couple goals and still didn't get on the pitch. So who knows? I can't really see that being the case, considering the giant contingent, you know, of we only have like three English players left anyway at United at this point in time. But yeah, I think Wilcox, his remit, obviously, you know, when you look at where he's coming from, Omar Barada, City, the multi-club model. Jason Wilcox, academy director at Manchester City. Dan Ashworth, highly responsible for a big part of the youth English setup, which is resulting in some of the best, you know, English setup that has been for a long, long time. So when you kind of look at the focus here, there's an interesting kind of three things that Ineos are trying to do that I think are worth mentioning. Is one, the multi-club model. Getting that is the way of the future. It is necessary. Yeah. You know, you have a player like Pafundi, this young Italian player who's joined Lausanne on loan, has a 15 million buyout. That would be a by far and away a record transfer for them. But if they buy him, and United can buy him and even loan him back for a year to continue his development there, they can turn a profit in there. And this is sort of the use of this kind of model. They're looking, a big thing they're looking at that I do want to stress in this podcast now is the South American market. A huge, huge thing they want to. Yeah, they really, really want to go ahead. And I did get some new, like just more encouragement on that front that it is absolutely, they're having regular discussions, talks, scouting, looking at players there. There's young Brazilian players like there's one named Thales. But, you know, joining somewhere like United straight away is probably really difficult for a lot of these players, sometimes from an age perspective because of Brexit, and sometimes just from a readiness where you want them to go somewhere else. But looking at those players and saying, could they go to Nice next season? Absolutely becomes viable. And so Omar Barada, a big part of that, you know, but then as well, recruiting young and buying players young to really build this team out is something where Wilcox, Ashworth have a lot of experience with.
Because obviously Brighton targeted that market quite a bit. Yes. And Anselmino is someone that Brighton looked at for quite a long time. So I imagine that's part of Ashworth's list. And obviously that is the type of signing that they're looking to make and use the multi-club model. I got really good information on this. I mean, we started talking about this 5-6 months ago at least, you know, United were heavily targeting the young South American market. I know they're looking at a few kids in Croatia, so in that league too, Croatia, Serbia, an Eastern European league. So I think you'll see a lot more of this type of signing. And, you know, it's really important that United are able to use that city. You're signing Savio this summer. It's exceptional. Done really, really well at Girona. You know, these are the things that United should have been able to use for quite a while. Let me ask you about Anselmino and some of the other signings. What are you hearing on it?
Yeah, I mean, that would be, this is the young Argentinian, right?
Yeah, it's not a back from Boca Juniors.
He would be on loan. He would go on loan for sure to Nice.
I think he wanted to send him to Nice.
What's that?
I think they wanted to bring him over to Lausanne first, then to
Nice. Yeah, that could be the case. But he'll definitely go on loan if they sign him.
He's a talented young kid, but United obviously want to get these players quite early. I know that they wanted young Argentinian kid that City signed after the 2017, I forget his name. You know, we're looking at him quite heavily too, but they lack the contacts to get these deals done before other clubs. So, you know, it's something that we'll see a lot more of. I know they liked William Estevao kid. I know they've watched him a lot. I think you're quite right. It's difficult with Brexit, but there's ways around this. Go ahead with Ashworth. So you were saying that you feel that I've got a couple minutes left on that. You go. You think he'll get done by the summer?
No, I don't. I don't think he'll join by the summer. I think that's sort of where it's heading at the moment. Is that as of today, there's nothing to say he's going to start before summer, and it's been really difficult to. That's what they've been pushing for, but they've continued to run in kind of a brick wall of it, 20 million, you know, to start before summer, which is an insane amount considering the PSR problems, things like that. You don't amortize that when you're paying for a director. It's just 20 million in a straight loss. And they need this season to have positive financial results to enable them to spend an enormous amount. I mean, over the next few years to do what they need to do. So no, I think that as I was gathering, they were working on it, but starting to look at some kind of like alternative plans for this year to try to sort this summer out and get things moving still without it being totally held up. I strongly suspect they'll end up getting a deal sometime before midsummer for him to join in September or October in the end, and that's what'll happen.
On the $20 million thing with Ashworth, then yes, in terms of precedent, the $20 million is exorbitant. I think this is going to be normal because as we get into PSR, that becomes absolutely vital. The football clubs are running, financial doping gets harder. There's a real dearth of people with quality and experience that are capable of running a football club like that. So that one, you can get the advantages from being run economically and being run in an efficient way. And I think that they're going to become so much more valuable and important to successfully run football clubs. I mean, think about United paid Mina Rewala more than that in commission for Pogba. And I just feel that, this is going to become normal. I think that you're going to see high-end executives constantly getting poached because they're so vital. Now I'm making sure that your football club is run accordingly. So I don't know if United will pay the $20 million, but I have to be honest, I'm one of the ones that would think that I would pay it.
I know what you mean. I mean,
United have been run underground by really, really poor executives. No one's more responsible for United's demise in their current situation than the really bad management.
Yeah, I know. And it's a little bit of a tricky thing because it's like you buy a player for $20 million, they're going to be on the pitch. You buy a director for $20 million. Technically, they don't do anything, by nature of buying them, like just automatically. In one very direct way of looking at it, but in a lot of ways, that $20 million is a better investment than any other investment you could make. And so I'm not in disagreement. I guess the question would be, how much, weighing up how much he could affect in a very short amount of time.
Think about this. He was one of the main reasons why Brighton signed Caicedo, and then he sold him for what, $100 million.
Yeah,
he paid himself $1 million and that. I mean, if he just one deal like that, justifies it instead of walking in and paying $80 million, $95 million for Anthony. You have a proper guy that plans it out properly. You get him for half a price. It's the way you scale their contributions, obviously different from an on the field sporting contribution. But one of the things that makes City so successful is they have highly competent people in those positions, know what they're doing. And all it takes is one idiot in the chain for everything. Any of us know what they're doing, right? Yeah. So, obviously you have sticker shock immediately, but when you seriously think about it.
I would hope they resolve it. I still hope that they will resolve it and get it done, in time. It's just,
how important is that to the Ten Hag decision?
I don't think as much as it might be made out. I don't think they have to wait for Dan Ashworth to get in to be deciding on a lot of things like that.
No, but if you're the new manager, you'd want to know who you're working for, right?
Oh, for sure. And that's why I think that either way they have to resolve it so that you know when he's coming in within the next few months. One way or another, it has to be settled that he's joining, and a date. That has to be settled for sure because you need to understand what the remit is. At the same time, obviously I think that's a big part of why you'd want to get in someone like Jason Wilcox. What's that?
Wilcox got an answer to that question. Who am I working for?
Yeah, well, one thing obviously that helps is that he's experienced working in the past under Omar Barada in some capacity, right? So he's familiar with him from being at City beforehand. And that'll help. I mean, when you look at it in one way, Wilcox is a director of football right now. I think that's why he's a priority, because even if Dan Ashworth doesn't come in between Barada and Wilcox, you have a normal team's amount of football expertise, maybe a little bit better than that, given the nature of their histories in there. So it would help. I think when you throw Dan Ashworth into the mix, you make maybe one of the better sporting structures in Europe by putting it all together. So I think that, at the same time, there's, with this whole gardening leave thing, there's a degree of, how much conversation occurs anyway, that obviously has been going on with Omar Barada regardless. And you have to imagine how much with Dan Ashworth regardless, at least in terms of coordinating things properly. I still think overall one would look at it and say, have Barada. Ashworth will come at some point when Wilcox looks like that's moving ahead now, and they'll probably make another hire after that too. And I think that anybody who's smart would look at this job if they were to hire a manager, but this would include players. Anybody who's looking at joining United, let's say, would look at it and say, yes, there could be a little bit of short-term chaos here, but this is a hell of an opportunity for the biggest club potentially in the world that may be on its way back up to do something special.
Tell you what, James, if I'm Ten Hag, I'm nervous.
Oh, right?
Imagine you're in a new job in a company where you've just been bought out and you're having a whole new management structure being constructed right above you.
Mm-hmm.
And by definition, their first job is to find problems so that they can have solutions because the club's not performing. And the most obvious and easy one is, hey, this is not our guy. Mm-hmm. And you have to now, you know, they already have people in mind that they believe would be the right person for this job. And I'm pretty certain that does not mean Erik ten Hag. And I would look at that as a threat and say that I doubt he's been consulted on any of this as to whether he wants his people in place. These are people that you have to get along with, that they have to believe in you. And you need to be in a position of strength, which Ten Hag is not. If I'm him and I'm looking at these people being put in above me, I would be talking to my agent.
Yeah, I mean, if simply put, the CEO has been replaced. John Murtaugh has been replaced, even if he moves to another position. Darren Fletcher's being replaced, even if he moves to another position. Every single executive kind of function role at this club on the football side is being replaced, and the manager is the next on that list in that respect. And so I would agree.
Look at what quick would remember Zach Moyes, because it wasn't as good.
Yeah. And it's sometimes as simple as that. That's why it's always been the most likely outcome, kind of regardless of what happens. Sometimes it is that simple. And obviously the results and where things are at have not helped that situation. So I guess that's an answer we'll find out probably a little closer to summer whether that happens. I do think it does with these hirings in place. That being the next question to be asked and the results going poorly to where the league is probably over, that clarification I think is necessary, very, very necessary now, more than ever. I don't think they can wait now to do that.
I do too. Yep. All right, Mama, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Thanks to all of you folks for downloading the podcast as always. I hope you've had a good 2 weeks. Sorry for the weekend, even though it was a draw, feels like it was a 5-0 defeat. We will catch you again next week. By then, we will have had Chelsea and Liverpool, and we'll see where we're at.
Yep.
So, big week. All right, man. Take it easy.
See you later.
See you, folks. See ya.